Hi, this is Jeff Barr, and this is AWS Podcast. Today, I'm interviewing Boris Diebold of Babel. He is the vice president of Babel and coming to us from, where are you coming from?
Germany, Berlin, Germany, actually.
Germany, excellent. Okay, give me a sense of what Babel does.
Well, Babel, if you don't know it yet, is an app for online language learning. So what we do is we make language learning easy and available to everyone. We offer professional design courses in 14 learning languages and 7 display languages. And basically, the users can learn at home, on the web, on the go, with a smartphone or tablet apps. Right. So what we actually want to do is help people discover the joy of learning outside of a really professional educational setting. And we have courses that let them integrate that into their everyday life to stay motivated. And, well, the average user sticks with Babel for more than 12 months. So that's quite a success for us.
Excellent. So how did you decide to get into this business?
Well, the founders originally came from a music industry background or software music industry background. They all worked at Native Instruments here in Berlin. And the original plan was actually to start something different. It's more like a musician collaboration platform, which didn't really get off the ground. And then one of the founders, from one day to the other, came back to the office and said, I have a new idea. We are going to do language learning because there's nothing like that existing already. And I tried to learn Spanish, and there's no great tool.
So this very, very interesting. So you had an initial plan. You said we'll do a music collaboration. Didn't see any traction there and said, well, we've built something and we can do something else with it.
Exactly. And there was a lot of concerns like, yeah, but we are not like professional didactics people, etc. But, well, I think part of the success was they were very customer focused. They're very good at attention to detail and iterating on the product. They started basically then as soon as the product base was there to hire a professional didactics team and build that out. And well, yeah, success speaks for itself right now. So the platform has been in operation for almost 7 years now, yeah, since 2008. We are growing fast.
How have things changed in the business since 2008?
Well, there's all kinds of new technologies upcoming, right? In 2008, there was just web, right? And then with the advent of mobile devices as well as iPad, there was a huge shift, I would say, on mobile markets, right? And also in adoption of this kind of, I would say, language learning technology in general.
Now, when you made that big shift from being music collaboration to language learning, did you have to actually, like, bring in new people with new experiences, or did you kind of say, well, let's learn as we go?
Well, actually, that was for the core team at this point in time was learn as we go, right? And then they started to, hire the first professional didactics person in that space, yeah? And, grow a content/didactics department that is really focused on providing this premium personalized content that we provide.
Okay, why don't you walk me through the process? If a new customer finds your site and decides they'd like to learn a new language, what do they do? What is the teaching method? How do they interact? What happens?
Yeah, so basically, it's very easy. You go either to our website or you go to the App Store, download the app, Babel, learning English or any other language that you want to learn. We have a short onboarding experience that basically takes you through the way that the trainers work, etc. And then you can select different courses based on your proficiency level. And we take you on a, I would say, language journey. We have different subjects and different learning methods. There's a mix of interactive trainers, spelling trainers, pronunciations, dialogues, etc. So to enrich the learning experience and also a lot of like different content types based on different interest areas, etc., that we release continuously to the users.
Okay, so I was wondering over the course of that year that your users stay with the platform typically, what level of proficiency and skill can they expect to pick up?
Yeah, that depends very much on the type of learner that you have, right? So we have a very diverse background actually because we're doing a mass market product, right? So our customers are people that we call the casual learners, right? These are people that want to learn a language, but don't really have to in a business or educational setting. So there's all kinds of like motivational factors on, I want to communicate better while traveling, or I want to use it as self-improvement tool, or mental fitness, cultural interest, all this kind of stuff. And there are some people that come back several times a day and really, you know, they have like huge notebooks on what they learn in addition, and that are very diligent in basically repeating vocabulary. There are people that basically do some small bursts when they like go out, for example, to visit a new country, or they go to a conference or whatever. Totally depends. You can't classify that because the, how to say, the user base is too diverse.
Do most people focus on learning a single language, or do they say, well, I've mastered one and let me go on to do a second and a third?
Most people actually focus on learning one language, right, as like a base proficiency. But then they also, many of the people basically say, hey, I want to get a second proficiency in, let's say, Spanish or whatever. But they usually don't go as deep as in the primary language.
Okay. Now, I'm assuming you do a lot of metrics and big data behind the scenes. Are there any interesting kind of pairs of, I know this language and I'd like to learn this other language, that you would kind of look at and say, well, that's a really interesting kind of combination of two languages?
There certainly are. I don't know them by heart right now.
Okay. No problem at all. Okay. All right. So you talked about kind of, we've got the casual learners. So any interesting success stories from among your customer base that might have gotten back to you about people that use Babbel and then said, okay, this has enabled me to move to another country or get a new job or get a new kind of responsibility in my job?
You know, like, as always, there are these famous things like people who met while they were learning at Babbel and married afterwards, etc. Or we get a lot of like letters back from people, hey, no, I surprised my girlfriend by learning Swedish and her whole family, and when I went visiting them for Christmas and all kind of things. Yeah. So there are a lot of like, how to say, heartwarming stories on how we make an impact on people's life. That's
okay,
actually what we want to
you
do.
You just gave me a really interesting clue there. I think you just hinted that there's really a person to person aspect to this as well.
Yeah, that's
right. How does that work?
Sorry, I didn't get your question. Sorry.
I think you kind of hinted at the fact that there's really a user-to-user or a person-to-person kind of an aspect to Babbel. So
we have some, but currently we don't focus on the social aspects of the platform so much, because for us, the main driver is basically building out a scalable platform, which adapts as much as possible to the user in the learning path. So that's
okay.
Our current focus.
Why don't we talk a bit about the platform? What is the architecture, the structure? How does it all fit together?
Yeah. So we have been a long time Amazon customer, actually. I just looked it up. I think we signed up 2010. And for us, this has been like quite a success story, to be honest. We are running on a typical Ruby on Rails stack. So we still have some, I would say, even legacy component, larger monolith that we are currently breaking up into microservices. So on the front-end side, we have a lot of JavaScript, of course, for the web, supported by AngularJS and Bootstrap, React. And then our apps, the old ones that we have are in Objective-C, and we are currently replatforming to Swift, as well as Java and Android. So nothing too spectacular on the stack, I would say, for the languages. But as I already mentioned, we have been and are still a heavy adopter of Amazon core services. So in the beginning, basically, we started out with just EC2 instances and some S3 storage for pictures and sound files, etc. Then by then, we still had a self-baked AMI that with our own package system, etc. And what actually was for us the breakthrough is that we had early contact with Scalarium, which later got bought by Amazon, as now Amazon Officeworks. So, which helped us a lot in basically just setting up stacks and refreshing stacks as we go along. So these optimization tools basically helped us a lot in moving forward and also in keeping a very lean DevOps function, which we have until the current state. So we have a very lean infrastructure team that enables our feature teams to deliver. And we're basically looking into almost every new Amazon service that's upcoming.
Okay. So you talked a lot about your need to build a scalable platform. Kind of tell me kind of like if you can, like, are there days, hours that are busier than others? Kind of what size of user base do you have to handle? Those kinds of things.
Yeah. So we have a special seasonalities also, which we actually have to cater to, which is mostly about Christmas and January. So there's like a, for us, like a scaling challenge, which is by now very well mastered via our infrastructure. And then in general for us, it's the sheer data volume that we have, of course. Yeah. So we started out building a data lake in S3 and storing event data, having all kinds of different means to process it moving forward. Yeah, so that's the main reason for us.
Okay, so you said a scalability bump in December and January. Why do you think that comes about?
Well, that's mostly about our marketing activities also, and especially like New Year's resolutions. It's basically our business because people start learning a new language and they continue basically with full force in the new year.
Got it. Okay. All right. So how many users do you typically have online, if that's a number you can share?
No, we actually don't share user numbers.
Okay, not a problem at all. Yeah. Oh, okay, so you said you used Ruby on Rails, JavaScript, Angular, and so forth. How has that evolved over the years?
Well, as I mentioned before, what we are currently in transition is basically building a major new iteration of our product, which includes the platform. So one of the main moves that we're currently undergoing is transforming our platform into more microservice approach, which comes along with also an organizational setup change because we changed parts of the product team. We changed part of the product teams to cross-functional feature teams that include basically in each feature team all disciplines necessary to deliver one slice of the product end-to-end. Yeah. And this it's actually helping us a lot in driving feature delivery forward, reducing the cycle time, and is perfectly supported also by the platform we get from AWS in that perspective.
Okay. Are you looking to like a container model or a serverless model?
Yeah, we are running some Docker actually currently on in our development environment. We're currently still using CloudFormation to, and we're actually also evaluating other tools in order to generate our stacks in production. But definitely the move towards a more containerized model is quite interesting for us.
Okay. Tell me a bit, if you could, about like your testing and your scalability testing that you don't have to do.
You mean in terms of like load testing or?
Both. Kind of like functionality testing, load testing, your release cycle. Like how do you build and how do you ship?
Yeah. So in general, what we do is we try to ship as often as possible in production. We not really have continuous delivery yet, but if needed, we release several times a day, especially for backend and web. So we have some automated regression tests to basically cover for that, but still some kind of independent QA department that does exploratory tests, both on the clients as well as on some content structures, yeah, to see that this works. And of course, like the testing cycle on the mobile clients is a little bit reduced because you always have to push to the store. But there's also possibilities in this perspective to use feature toggles, etc., in order to push things out.
Okay. So you said that you currently support 14 languages. How do you go about choosing the languages that you support and where might you be going in the future?
Well, the languages are basically dictated by the markets, right? So we did a market analysis on what kind of core markets are interesting for us, where people would like to use this tool and start learning, right? And the learn languages are basically then, inferred from their need. The last language that we introduced was Russian last year, which was also quite interesting for us because it's the first language with a non-Latin alphabet, which also poses basically some additional challenges because you have to explain people how to read the alphabet first and learn how to type it on the keyboard and how to spell the vowels because it's much different. But it has been quite a success And yeah, we are producing a lot of additional Russian courses right now.
Do you typically find that as you're analyzing your data, do you look at like users' geolocation and map that to languages and try to learn interesting facts from that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like different motivations that you can see from people on how they learn and what basically they have as their learning goals. And that also differs by country, right? That differs by age group, of course, yeah, because we also have like a large number of people, I think about around 40%, that are over 55, actually. And they have a different learning pattern and different behavior than people in their 20s, right? So this is all kind of stuff that basically we can infer from data and that we, of course, leverage in the product to make it more adaptable.
Okay, that's very interesting. So being myself over 55, I'd be really interested to hear what you how us old folks learn differently.
Well, there's just, in general, there's a much less focus on gamification features, I would say, right? Much more sincere content. With like real world examples practically, and this also what we've seen is people are more diligently in basically this age group in reviewing vocabulary, you know, and diving deeper into grammar, which is not so interesting to people in their 20s.
So age and maturity counts for something then?
Yes. probably it's also just the availability of time. That could also be.
Okay, so you are based in Berlin. Is the entire business and dev team in Berlin, or are you scattered around the world?
We are basically centered in Berlin, but we have a small team also in New York, you know, because we are currently looking forward to growing the American market. So we have a team landed there that is basically taking care of marketing operations in the U.S. But the core team is in Berlin.
Do you participate much in the startup world, the startup scene in Berlin?
Yeah. So I must say, actually, it's super interesting for us. The startup scene in Berlin has picked up speed very, very much over the last 5 years. I've been living here for 15 years, and I must say, like 15 years ago, there was basically nothing. But over the last years, it has really picked up speed, and there's a lot of like meetups happening. There's a lot of exchange between all startups here in Berlin, and I must say it's a really, really friendly culture, right? Where people help out each other quite a lot. So there's not a lot of competition. I mean, of course, for talent, as always, right? But in general, I think it's a very open and energetic atmosphere. I like it very much.
That's good to hear. So lots and lots of things to do and people to communicate with and so forth.
Yeah.
Okay, so I always like to ask my guests, like, what kind of advice do you give to aspiring entrepreneurs that might have a great idea and not quite ready to jump in?
What do you mean, like, not ready to
jump in? Maybe they've got the idea, but they're kind of standing there on the edge, and they're not quite ready to actually do it and commit. What should they do?
I think sometimes you just have to basically, throw away all advice you get from others and just do it, right? Because if you want to really start a new thing, and change something, you have to be very persistent, follow yourself through, and just try it out.
Makes great sense. So along that way, once you decided to change the focus from music collaboration to language learning, how long into that journey was it before you said, okay, this is working and this is really what we should be doing.
Yeah, actually, it took quite some time to really pick up speed, right? So I think it was almost about 1.5 years before the team saw some real traction. But the reason is also that they were operating in an undefined market, right? So it's always the case because there was no similar tool existing, right? So you have to do two things in parallel. You have to create the market, right? Get users interested in this and also explain it to them what's now available and then find out in which direction you want to go.
Got it. Now, what's your funding model? Is this a free service or how do the users pay for using this?
We are a subscription service, actually. And we've also seen that this is an important factor with regards to the motivation of the users, right?
That does make sense, given that once they've paid for it, they've made that commitment over the longer term to continue their learning adventure. Okay, so what are you kind of thinking toward the future? What kind of goals or plans or aspirations do you have for this over the coming months and years?
Well, in general, there's a lot actually that we can do moving forward. For us, the main challenge is to focus our energy on the most promising perspective. I can't really tell more about that. On the technical side, we are basically exploring a lot of new technologies and a lot of new big data technology, of course, to make the product much more adaptable to the users, because that's the next step for us, to really have a personalized learning experience while providing a mass market product.
Sounds wonderful. Okay, is there anything else that we haven't covered that you wanted to make sure that we had a minute or two to discuss?
No, I think it's cool.
Excellent. All right, Boris, this has been great. I've really enjoyed speaking with you. Really appreciate your time.
Same here, Jeff.
My pleasure.
All right.
This has been the AWS Podcast. This recording is part of the Intel Startup Spotlight. I'm Jeff Barr, and thank you for listening.